Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramarte Feo on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. We are an associate of the Commons Project Network. Good evening, everyone. This is Gather Round, and I'm Ruth Anna Marte-Feo, and we're going to get right to it. We've got Monique Johnson coming in, and Monique, hello. It's good to have you.
Hello, hello. It's great to be back.
So, just take it away.
Oh, wow. Awesome. Well, it's nice to be here. This is Monique Johnson with HealthyMovementsInternational.com. And my first intention was last week I made the intention to speak on some of the chakras. And then I had an experience today, and I was like, well, we may get to chakras, but I think this is more apropos. So there are many ones, and what's on my heart today is the energy level that a lot of people are feeling right now, and ones who are kind of empaths, or they're empathic very, very much so that they can kind of feel in their own being another person's emotions, not just sympathetic, can see it and have sympathy, but actually feel it in their own being. There are many, many people who are like that, rather, and there are a lot more who are becoming more conscious that they're like that, because really, it can be described a lot of times as having a lot of energy in the heart sensing department, in that energy center. And as a lot of more people become less concerned with the appearance of things and more concerned with their inner core, their soul, you know, the Oprah followers and all this, then you find that there's a lot more energy in the heart. And if it is not moved from the heart to integrate into the whole system of the being, every layer expressed out, then it can cause a very high empath or empathic response. So that being the case, once that's happened, then you're familiar with the empath tool, and you can from then on say, you know, I'm an empath, or I can use that tool. And for those ones, though, when the energy is high and there's a lot of change going on in life, then it really can rock them off center. And I'm a high-sensitive empath, and for whatever reason, because I don't really know numerology or any of that, I love all of that. It just, I don't know it. But for whatever reason, it seems like it's August is my highest sensitivity month. And I have a lot of my friends that are kind of going through that as well. So what I say to you is, one, remember your journey is alive. So when you're feeling that overwhelm, you can talk to yourself and to life to be like, you know, I need help. And then a few practices that just will help to ground you and connect you back up to yourself instead of feeling all the things that everyone else is feeling, but will connect you back to yourself is some of the grounding practices of I had mentioned in one of my tea talks the movie that Will Smith just did with his son, how it goes through a basic grounding practice. And a couple of the steps they do is they call it take a knee. So if you're somewhere, if you're like at the house, you're cooking or whatever, and you're just overwhelmed with emotions that don't really have anything to do with washing the dishes or what you've been through in the day, then that's saying you're having an empathic experience, an experience of an overwhelming amount of energy in one energy center, and that's the heart. So if you're by yourself, you can always put one knee to the earth, to the ground, and focus on your breath and breathe deeply. And by just doing that, you will start to bring your awareness back to to yourself, and it will get out of a lot of the variations of energy you're feeling. Okay, it will kind of ground you back down. So you take a knee, and then one of the things that I think they said in there that I know works anyway, whether they said it or not, you bring all of your awareness to everything that is in the present moment. So if your knee's on the earth, you feel the earth beneath the knee and on the foot. You know, you feel you are in your body. You start to go into, what do I smell? You know, can I hear anything? Do I hear, you know, the TV playing? If there's a scent, open your eyes and see your toes, you know, and then gradually start to close them and bring all of awareness to your breath, just the breath, and breathe. And that way it gives you a moment just to release all the, and this really works for people who are not, have an empath channel that they kind of get overwhelmed with at times. For people who are just very stressed out when they get home, and so they get home and they get into the spot of, oh, well, let me scream at the kids because da-da-da, you know. And they're carrying all of the energy of the day with them to that present moment, and they're not acting from that present moment. They're acting from all of the past. So you bring yourself right back to this moment. So for my friends who are out there, the ones who are having overwhelming energy from the heart, or even the ones who are overwhelmingly stressed in their day-to-day life, know that you're not alone. That you really are just, you know, you're using a spoon to relate in life in that moment, that there's a fork that's better. It makes it a little bit easier to cut, you know. And there's nothing wrong with experiencing the overwhelming and being and choosing to keep experiencing that. There's nothing wrong with that either. Where freedom exists is being able to choose either one. So that's a little love that I'd like to send out to them. And then we will just start in a little bit to the heart chakra, because that kind of leads us right into the heart chakra, and I think I have about 5 to 7 minutes. So with the heart energy center, chakra is just an energy center, and if you listen to the last our recorded from 2 weeks ago, it'll tell you a little bit more about chakras and kind of lead you into what we're talking about now, so I won't review that. But in the chakra, the heart chakra, the heart energy center, there are certain emotions that make it flow. And those emotions are compassion and love, you know, and not the love, the tit for tat, you do this, I'll do that, that's connected to expectations, obligations. Let's just take the word love out of it altogether. It is about 100% acceptance and embracing what is, with the openness for it to change at any time. So there's no attachment to that acceptance, okay? And hoping that, you know, it'll change and to be authentic enough to see the changes, choice changes in your life, and to choose, or either to choose to flow with life and not have to really make the choices in the moment. So that's two ways of living life. But that's the heart chakra. Now, the thing that stops up the heart chakra is loss, any kind of a feeling of grief and loss. And this doesn't have to be another human. This can even be just the loss of a part of yourself that you have left behind or that you won't acknowledge in the present moment. Okay? Any kind of loss, any kind of grief, the death of a part of you that you have killed out of trying to satisfy what the mind says is okay to look like or to live like as, life as, you know. That can result in a heart loss and a grief for a death that, you know, really all you have to do is wake up and reintegrate it. So that those kind of energies, that energy is what blocks the heart chakra. And so the experiences that we have in our lives, if during that experience we created some kind of loss or we're constantly creating grief because we keep every moment, every day, a part of us underneath the bed or in the hamper or, you know, closed off, that we are creating grief unknowingly each and every day. And someone asked me today as I was having a conversation, well, maybe that's okay. Well, absolutely it's okay to choose to be that way. But if you don't know that that's what you're doing, then maybe it's time to wake up. You know, if you don't know you're creating, if you haven't really gone through it to see, am I creating negative energy by making this choice? Am I denying myself? Is there a part of me that's like, hey, we want to live too? That's like, you know, saying that you keep pushing down because of whatever circumstance or whatever judgment you have on yourself or you think the world has on you. And all of those choices are okay. There's nothing right or wrong with it. It is just the opportunity lies in being aware of it. And once you're aware of it, it is not an unconscious driver. So all of that stuff, those experiences of life, those perceptions, those beliefs, those ways of looking at things, all of that experience get either released in each given moment. It's not stored. It's understood. It is embraced. It's released, as your journey says, or it gets packed up in luggage, and those luggages, those Samsonites, are deposited in the energy center, which is the heart, as we're talking about right now. And then the flow of love, and well, we threw love out because it has so many meanings, but the flow of compassion and total acceptance and total openness for interchange of that energy, then it can flow again. And the heart is the fulcrum of all of your other chakras. And the fulcrum, I mean, think of a seesaw. So whenever there's an imbalance, you got to touch the heart again, get connected to your heart, your compassion for yourself, so that anything else, any imbalance can show up. If you don't, if you're not able to show that compassion to yourself, you won't be able to see it. You may be able to sense it, but you won't, more than likely, you will not be able to see it unless the journey of life is going to break you down, and woo, who wants that to happen? So that you can see yourself clearly, you know. And what it is really an overall intention for, you know, I want to live life more fully. People call out for more happiness. All these intentions makes it to where the journey is like, okay, your heart is a deeper part of you is asking to be released from this, even though the ego and the shallow part that you're conscious of is like, no, I don't need no release. And so that's when the journey puts you in a situation that you are forced to deal with it. And the thing is that if that is your intention of life, is to have these positive overall intentions, these positive overall experiences, then the most compatible tool with that is yin, letting go, because the journey will automatically take you to that spot, and it'll clear up all the crap that it takes to clear up for you to exist in that spot. And if the drama and the fear and the ick and the contention and the control is the thing that floats your boat and you really want to do that, then the best thing to do is be very yang, to do, to control, to, and then your journey will steer you, the boat of your life will steer you deeper and deeper into contention, which is, less than expansion. But even with the wrong, right, it's all just a choice. It's just a choice of whatever you want to experience. Some people like experiencing happiness and peace. I'm one of those people. And some people like experience unhappiness and pain, and, you know, ain't nothing wrong with them either. We're just flip sides of the same coin. So that is all I have for today, and I think I'm right at my time limit. Uh-huh. I would like to say thank you, everybody who takes the time to listen to this. This is all just what life has taught me, so there are no absolutes, rights, and wrongs in my experience. There are just different perspectives, and if you like a perspective, you try it on, you take it as a tool, and you move in, you know, you keep moving in life with that tool at your side. So have a beautiful day. Namaste. Monique Johnson, www.healthymovementsinternational.com. Back to you, Ruthann.
Thank you so much. No, so much information, and I love the way that we talked actually before the show started about the fact that sometimes you just don't do things quite the way you think you're going to.
Yeah.
Like you said, you know, you've been going to start with the chakras, and then something was on your heart today, so you were talking about the empath issues. So
yes.
That's important. And
yes.
Sometimes, I mean, we have to have our foundational plan, but we have to have the flexibility to throw it out.
Exactly, yes. When the journey says something is more important, or your God, or your heart, whatever your source is, say, hey, something is more helpful for you to do it a different way. And you can feel it. You know, you can feel when you're like, just like, no, I'm going to do it my way. Or when you're like, no, I plan on doing it this way, but hey, if something come up, it come up, you know. And it's a beautiful thing to be able to let go at any moment and then to engage any moment.
That takes practice, though.
When they, it does.
You know, because a lot of people, they get into that rigidity, whether it's dogma from religion or whatever.
Yes.
And they just
yes.
can't seem to move from it.
Yes. And
so.
And then it's, and what's so great about that is that the mind in that spot, the mind is playing games with itself. You know, it's like telling me, you are moving, you are expanding. Well, no, really, you're not, you know. And it's playing games with itself. And the beautiful thing is that we all have another layer that's deeper than the mind. So if it happens long enough and the person's journey needs to move along, then it's like the parent that's like flicks and be like, nope, time to change.
Well, I thank you so much. And
oh, my pleasure.
Or yes, we will. Next week.
Yes, okay. Next week. Thank you so much, Ruthann. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Now we're going to go to Hello, Merle. Mr. Merle.
Hello, Ruthann.
Hi. I wanted to say that you can be found at www.merlestevens, that's STEVENS, 1946.blogspot.com. And we're going to talk tonight about music and how you got started and your inspiration, things like that. Did you always write music? I mean, did you take piano lessons when you were five? You know, that's my...
No, no, I didn't. Well, I did start to, but I didn't stay at it very long, just about one lesson is all I had.
Oh,
but
one.
However... Ruthann, my mother died when I was 7 months old, and she was very good at playing songs by ear, and she could hear a song on the radio and just go to the piano and play it. She was very gifted, and I never even thought I would ever write a song. I had that, didn't even have that in my mind, and lo and behold, all of a sudden, I had to retire because of blindness and being over the road for 30 years with my own truck, and I had to get off, and here I am retired, and I had to have something to do with my mind to keep it going and to find things to do, and one day I just decided I wanted to write songs, and I didn't know anything about music. And so I thought, well, maybe I could take up the guitar, learn how to play that, and I could learn music. That's how kind of dumb I am, because then I had to learn the notes on the guitar, too.
But well, that's not dumb.
Anyways, I did take a few lessons. I did take lessons for about 2 years there with the guitar, and I still can't play it very good. But in the process, I did start writing some songs, and... lo and behold, about 20 years ago, one day I got this thought in my head, wonder why nobody has written a song about stinking thinking. And lo and behold, after I'd written a couple of songs and was wondering one day, what can I write now? And that popped back into my head. And so I sat down and I wrote Stinking Thinking. And then in the process, you know, I never gave no thought of what am I going to do with these songs. I mean, I was just going to write songs. you know, I didn't even think about recording or any of this other stuff. That was way over my head. And after I got Stinkin' Thinkin' Wrote, I thought, I wonder if it's a song.
Well, you know,
and
what?
And then I stumbled. What?
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, go finish Stinkin' Thinkin', and then we'll play it so people know what we're
okay.
talking about.
Okay. Yeah, so I sat down and wrote it, and in the process, I sent it off to Nashville Song Service that takes lyrics, and if they like your lyrics, they make a free demo for you. However, the first version of Stinkin' Thinkin' didn't get that way because I never heard nothing from it. They threw it in the trash.
Ah.
So about a year later, I sat down and rewrote the version that we hear on this demo that you're going to be playing.
Okay.
Sent that off to them,
well,
and that didn't win
different.
Either.
Well, but, yeah, but at least somebody, you know, made it. I really like it, though. Stinkin' Thinkin' is pretty prevalent.
Some say we're born with it. Others say we just don't have any willpower. But if you have an addiction and you cross over the line into an oppression, it will make you insane. It's not a line you walk or you snort. It will push your family and friends away and put you in a shallow grave. Subconscious thoughts slipping through my mind. I don't want to lie, have sweet alibis, and live in sin. I have to stop the stinking thinking again. Addiction can be put in a mission with 12 steps to higher power, the serenity prayer, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference, living one day at a time, a sponsored fellowship of men and women. Subconscious thoughts slipping through my mind. I don't want to lie, have sweet alibis, and live in sin. I have to stop the stinking thinking again. Subconscious thoughts slipping through my mind. I don't want to lie, have sweet alibis, and live in sin. I have to stop the stinking thinking again. And live in sin. I have to stop the stinking thinking again.
I don't know how much of that is biographical, but anybody who has been there really can recognize. And, you know, you have a way with words. The line that says, it's not a line that you walk or you snort. I just love that. It's like that pops out at me. What made you write this particular way about the 12-step program?
Well, really, it's really about stinking thinking and not the 12-step program. And
right.
If you stop and think, you know, really the short side of this is that I think a normal person just thinks of addiction. They think of alcohol, drugs, gambling, eating. But there's even more to that, and that could be greed and power, too, that could go in with that.
Mm-hmm.
And what I hope people get from this song is hope. And maybe enough from the stinking thinking that they will want to take an inventory and find out if they are.
Right. Well, thoughts are things. And the more that we think in the negativity, the more we manifest it, just like the more we think positive, the more we manifest it. So that makes sense. Now, you said that, now this one was recorded and sent to you. Free.
No, I paid for it.
Oh, you can. Oh, okay. I thought that they if they like it, they record it.
Yeah, that's only if you win their contest, and it didn't.
Oh, I see. It's a contest, so that okay.
Right, and depending on, this is the cheap demo. They have got all different range prices to make a demo, of course. And this was a cheap one. I talked to my guitar teacher before, and I said, which one should I have done? And he said, do the cheap one, because if any musicians are listening to this or hearing it, they can hear all the other stuff that belongs in there. So I took his word for it, and that's why I took the cheap one. So that's why it's just the guitar and Joel Robinson singing it.
But I think that was very good advice from your teacher, because like you said, you can, a musician can hear everything else, or even I'm not a musician and I can hear other things in there too. So and that's very nice. Has everything that you've had recorded been recorded by the same person, Joel?
Yes, it has. I've only had the two, this one and of course the next one, Superhighway.
All right. So what are you going to do with these?
Well,
what's your plan?
I'm really looking for somebody. When I started writing, I don't write for money and I don't write for fame or to become famous or anything. And so I'm really looking for somebody that would want to, a band that would want to record that, and somebody that would produce them and you know, market it and get it out there on the air for people to hear.
Okay. Okay.
Now, I can, if that don't happen, Ruth Ann, I can always take that CD and do more with it, have somebody redo it, and not in the aspect of redoing the song, but in doing, putting all this other stuff together now with today's technology.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I would have to try to sell it myself after I did that.
Right. And that, I don't know, I mean, sometimes that's easy, sometimes not so easy.
Right.
So what really inspires you to write then? Because I think
really it was just that thought, that stinking thinking is just, you know, it's so easy to do. And everybody does it. We all
sure.
do it, you know.
Yeah. And it feeds on itself. That's why
right.
you need to do that face slap and get yourself straight. And when I say yourself,
right.
I'm speaking generally, because otherwise, I mean, we start doing it, the people around us are doing it, and we just keep sinking. So
Yeah. And it can be over anything. You know, if you you want to buy a house, or if you want to buy a car, or you want to buy shoes or clothes, I mean, you can do that with that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. And politically, nowadays, it's real easy.
Yeah, I'm right.
Down. Yeah, those of us that deal with that all the time, it's like we do all kinds of things to try to keep our spirits up.
Yeah, that's right. Definitely.
Yeah.
Especially when you put in that power and greed thing with an addiction.
Yeah.
I mean, that isn't their addiction. Let's face it.
Oh, it is. It is. I read something a long time ago about how it's a game. And this is by somebody, a book by somebody who really has made it and lost it and made it again, speaking of money. And, you know, he said, you get so much money, it doesn't matter, you can't spend it, but it's a game to get more. And
right.
And that's part of that addiction thing. So
sure.
It's not it's not pretty. What
right.
are you, I'm sure that you must have written quite a few other songs that you haven't had recorded. Like the
poetry. I don't write a song a day. I've only written a few.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like 20. Mm-hmm. But I just keep writing and I keep trying to learn. And you know, how do I learn? You know, I don't know what's a good song, what's a bad song. And so that was one of the reasons I sent it to Nashville, to let
right.
them kind of tell me, you know, am I writing a song here or am I not writing a song? And with Superhighway, they, I think, really did a lot of justice for me, because I wrote the song like an old-style song. And that's one of my problems I have, is that I like to write songs in the old era. I'm talking 60s, 50s, 70s, know, that type of old country music, because that's the kind I like. So that's the kind I'm writing. And so with today's new music, you know, why they really made Superhighway into that kind of a song for me.
Well, let's play
and,
it.
And all they did was take the verse that I didn't really have a verse. They took part of that song, the ending of my song, and made it into a verse and made the song the way it is. So that's all they did with my song. So I learned something there.
Okay, we're going to play it.
I was born running around, running all over the farm. Even my dad couldn't slow me down. What can I do to slow you down? At 15, I left my dad, ran from the farm. Started to run all around the little town. I hope there's a super highway in heaven I can pound up and down. I hope God can settle me down. Put my feet up and stop my running around. Going to the army, they will make a man out of you and slow you down. But I came out still running around, running so hard I got myself into trouble that slowed me down. I thought I better settle down. I went to driving a big truck. I hope there's a super highway in heaven I can pound up and down. I hope God can settle me down. Put my feet up and stop my running around. Pounding up and down the road, coast to coast, border to border. Boy, how time flies. Running around 3 million miles, 4 ex-wives, and I still haven't settled down. Sure have seen a lot of things in all my running around. I hope there's a super highway in heaven I can pound up and down. I hope God can settle me down. Put my feet up and stop my running around. Put my feet up and stop my running around.
I love it. I love it. 3 million miles and 4 ex-wives. And you were a trucker, like you said, for 30 years. So you put a lot of miles on. Yeah. You retired.
And that is a true story.
The 4 ex-wives.
Of my life, Ruthann.
Okay.
Believe it or not.
I wondered. Mm-hmm. So you retired because of the blindness, I'm thinking.
Right.
Or did you retire and then? Yeah. Okay. So how much? How much do you see, Merle?
Actually, if you were to take a piece of paper and take a pencil and shove through that piece of paper, make a hole, and put that up to your eye, that's about how much light I have coming into my eye.
Okay. Okay. So you
I've got like 3 pairs of glasses that I wear to read or to look at, but I don't wear them out around. I wear sunglasses all the time because of the light.
Right. Okay.
Oh.
So you actually have to do some special things then, obviously, because of the.
Oh yeah. My photo mind that actually does my seeing. I'm really totally blind, but I use my photo mind to see with. In other words, if I'm someplace where I've never been, I can't see anything. But once I start to find out what's around me, then I can start to see it with my photo mind.
Oh, okay.
So if you take me into, let's just say we're going to go into a buffet.
Mm-hmm.
And you take me up to that buffet. Now, I know I'm up to the buffet, but you have to show me where the plates are, number one. Then number two, when we get up there, if you tell me, because I can't see anything, I know there's food there, you know, but everything looks the same to me. I couldn't tell you what was where or anything. But if you tell me there's mashed potatoes, gravy, and corn, the minute you say that to me, I'll be able to see each one of them. Because my mind has already got the picture there.
You visualize very well.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It took me a while. I mean, I had to practice and work at it.
Sure. But I think it's remarkable. And I like the fact that you're doing this because you didn't want your mind to atrophy. So when you had to get off the road, so it's all coming together. I really, really hope that we can find somebody to produce these songs because I love them. I love, like, the older country things myself.
Good.
Maybe more than the newer. But, and I, without saying a lot, I relate to this last song a lot. I've traveled the country a lot, and I've got some ex-people in my life, too. So, my friend, we're going to have to let you go. But once again, Merle, that's MerleStevens 1946.blogspot.com. And I want to have you back. So,
well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciated it.
Well, for now, I just will say goodbye, and we'll see you. On that
superhighway. Yep.
Before the superhighway.
Okay, cool.
On the,
okay,
the
thank you.
Highway. Right now, yeah, okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now we've got Ariel Montserrat with us. Hi, Ariel. Ah, oh, well, it would help. There we go. Hi, Ariel.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I put you live. Yeah, okay. You are the editor and publisher of Green Egg Zine.
Yep.
GreenEggZine.com.
Yes.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about that before we get into the topic for tonight?
Green Egg was started in 1968 by Oberon Zell Ravenheart, and it was started as a newsletter for the Church of All Worlds, which he also founded, which is basically an earth spirituality church. Everyone's welcome. There's no dogma, so period. And we love to have diversity. And then it became a kind of a soapbox for outside of the box thinking and what Oberon sometimes calls crackpot theories. You know, they sound crackpot, and people will call people crackpots, but you know, they actually hold water. You know, Tesla, I think probably 100 years ago, a lot of people probably told him he was nuts. You know.
Oh, beyond a doubt.
Yeah. And so we're continuing that tradition. It was shut down for various reasons in 2000. And then in 2007, my husband and I revived it. And it's strictly online. We would love to get back into print one day. So, you know, we have that as a goal. It's really expensive these days to do that. But anyway, we're online, and we publish four times a year. And I do all of it except for the layout and graphics, which my husband does. And then we also have a web mistress who keeps the website up. And so that's what we do. So we're trying to encourage people to think outside of mainstream ideas.
You might want to mention that you're also going to put up all the old issues online this year. So.
That is the project for this coming year. That's my goal, is to have every single issue that's ever been in print on our website, going all the way back to 1968. And it'll all be for free, and it can be used by universities for research when they do their pagan studies or goddess studies or you know, women's spirituality studies, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
You know, quite an undertaking, and we in the community are very grateful that you're doing it. So,
thank you. It's fun. It doesn't pay anything, but it's a hell of a lot of fun.
Payment comes in many forms. The financial aspect is just one of the ways.
Yeah.
So, tonight we're going to talk about a health situation that you find yourself in for many, many years. Do you want to start out telling us what was going down with you years and years ago, how you felt?
Well, 28 years ago, I was 30 years old, and I had always had abundant energy. Not a lot of stamina, but abundant energy. And I started losing that, and I started having days where it really got difficult to go to work. And I went to the doctor. He checked my thyroid, said it was just fine. Over the months and a couple of years, things got worse and I developed more symptoms until finally it got so bad I'd get up in the morning and the muscles on the bottom of my feet were so weak that I would fall down. Now, that's really scary to somebody who's always been healthy all their life.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. And, or ostensibly healthy, I'll put it that way. And so I started going to doctors. And they would run the whole battery of tests and say, well, you're just fine. Nothing's wrong with you. Oh, well, then how come I can't get out of bed in the morning? Well, we don't know. And that was it. No more research done, nothing. I went to probably somewhere between 15 and 20 doctors over the course of the next probably, 10 years or so, 15 years, I think. And I started doing my own research because it was obvious to me that the MDs weren't going to help me. And these were some of the top people. I mean, one guy went to Stanford. You know, this is in the San Francisco Bay Area. We have good medicine there.
Right.
Kaiser doctors, they all said the same thing. And I think they probably thought I was being a hypochondriac. But, you know, meanwhile, everybody at work knew I was sick. They could see it, you know. I'd be standing there having a conversation for 10 minutes and have to go sit down.
Yeah.
Anyway, I started doing my own research, and this is before the internet. So I went to health food stores. I went to the library. Finally found a book by an MD who's dead now. His name is Broda Barnes, B-A-R-N-E-S, and he wrote pretty much the standard book on thyroid, which is still the standard book on thyroid. There were others that add more information to it, but he lists every single thyroid disorder, symptoms, all of that, and he was an endocrinologist who was brilliant. And this was a long time ago, before they started relying on lab tests, and this is the whole problem. MDs rely on lab tests. They don't even look at you to see what kind of symptoms you had. I had a goiter sticking out of the side of my throat. And at the time, I was working with recovering people who were recovering from chemical dependency. And even they saw it. You know, these are people with foggy brains. Even they saw it and asked me about it. And I'd go into the doctor, well, your thyroid's just fine. And I was losing my hair. There's a look that hypothyroid people get. And it's like a fish face. Your face really starts to look like a fish. It's very strange.
Wow.
But that was happening, too. And I had so many symptoms that I made a list of symptoms. I had over 100 symptoms. And I'd walk into the doctor, and, you know, nobody paid attention. Finally, I was able to self-diagnose and realize, okay, this is low thyroid. And I was adopted at age 6. And somewhere in there, I connected with my birth family, and I found out that every single person on both sides of my parents' families and my parents had low thyroid. And
my God.
So
Body
that
on
was,
both sides? That's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, low thyroid people have low thyroid babies. And looking back, I think I probably always was a bit low in thyroid, but when you hit about 30, is when it really starts to show up, and that's what happened for me. So then I went to an endocrinologist and told them this about my family history, and they put me on, tried me on Synthroid, which didn't work. It's a synthetic big pharma drug for
thyroid.
Okay,
that's a prescription drug. Okay.
Yeah. And that didn't work. So I went for some more, many more years before I finally discovered that there is natural desiccated thyroid. It's made from pig thyroid, which is extremely similar to humans' thyroid. And it's all totally natural. Physicians will tell you there's a risk of mad cow, which is utterly ridiculous. And they'll also tell you that it will cause osteoporosis. Also utterly ridiculous, because the research studies say that the synthetic thyroid will give you osteoporosis, not the natural desiccated thyroid. And so, finally, what I did was I had to lie to the doctor, because you have to fight to get put on that. Doctors don't want to prescribe that because they've been told by Big Pharma that it's not as good, you know, it's scary stuff. And it's not unusual for a person to have to doctor shop and fight for years to get on the natural desiccated thyroid. But when they do, they feel better. And I've only ever come across one person, and that was online on a comment section, and I'm not sure she wasn't a shill for somebody, but who didn't do so well on the natural desiccated stuff. But everybody else I've come across, and this is literally hundreds of people, are doing far better on the natural desiccated thyroid. And that's when I started to get well. But I still had a lot of health problems and low energy, and I didn't know why. And by mistake, I happened upon a website one day about 3 years ago called StopTheThyroidMadness.com. And I encourage everybody to check out that website, because if you don't have the symptoms, you probably will know somebody who does. And it is an extremely helpful website. It's got tons of information, and it's got an email list. So I got on the list, and I started learning about adrenal fatigue. And then if you have adrenal fatigue, your body will not be absorbing the thyroid hormones. And so I started the protocol for adrenal fatigue and realized I'd had that for quite a long time. I had all the symptoms. It's a pretty simple protocol, but you can't smoke, you can't drink, and you need to take hydrocortisone replacement, which you can just go to the drugstore and get a tube of, anti-itch cream, you know, all those creams you use, like for antibacterial stuff. As long as it says hydrocortisone, that will work. So anyway, here I am 3 years later, finally getting well. I also went on bioidentical hormones 2 months ago, and that has been an enormous help. I mean, that stuff is wonderful, and I recommend that for everybody. But what I learned from Stop the Thyroid Madness is that there were literally thousands of people out there, just like me, for years going undiagnosed. And hypothyroid is not difficult to diagnose. The symptoms are pretty well unmistakable when you've got pretty low thyroid. The problem, and I learned from that website that the problem is why people aren't getting diagnosed. Because physicians don't, like I say, they don't look at you at the symptoms. They look at the numbers on the test results from your blood tests. And what they do is they grade on the curve. In other words, most people, they go by what most people in America, what their thyroid levels are. Well, there's a hell of a lot of undiagnosed thyroid people in America.
Well, there's a lot of people in America. So that mm-hmm. just seems like absolute utter nonsense that they would do the curve thing.
It's insanity. It's truly insanity. My husband was a school teacher, and he never graded on the curve because he thought it wasn't fair. It wasn't right. And finally, they lowered, I think 2 years ago or so, the cutoff point for low thyroid was anything below 5.0 on your lab report. They finally changed it to 3.0, but the word hasn't really gotten out too much. But it was finally, I had one doctor at the very end of this finally tell me, oh, you're in the low normal range. And some people are just more sensitive and you know, feel the lack of thyroid. But anyway, how I got onto the natural desiccated thyroid, I went to the doctor and told him I'd been on it. And for a while, and it worked just fine. And he said, okay, great. Give me the name of your physician so I can call and get your records. And I said, sorry, he died, he died a year or so ago or something, and that's why I'm here. Oh, well, okay. And so he wrote me out a prescription for it, and I got it and started feeling better. But, you know, that was whenever I think.
Well, now, Ariel, let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. When I used to work in the nutrition stores, we sold a lot of the desiccated organs and different things. What you were getting the prescription for, was that stronger than what you can buy in that nutrition store?
Oh, far more. Okay. If you have if you really have low thyroid, that's not going to fix the problem.
Okay.
And for a lot of people, it won't even help. You won't even notice a difference. And so, you know, I've got a list of symptoms here that I'd like to read, because there might be somebody listening who's going through the same thing. I've met tons of people like this. And then you go to Stop the Thyroid Madness, and that's when you find out. There are hundreds of people on this email list, and almost every one of them has the same story as me. And there are thousands of people across America. Anyway, the symptoms, it's really long. It's a long list, and I'm not going to read all of them, but it's on StopTheThyroidMadness.com, so you can go there and find out for yourself. And it's called The Long and Pathetic List of Symptoms. And anyway, less stamina than others and less energy than others. You will be fatigued. That's a dead certain one. You will just always be fatigued, and no matter how much you sleep, how much rest you get, you're still fatigued. Long recovery period after any exercising. Chronic low-grade depression often accompanies this, and I was diagnosed with depression. Suicidal thoughts, because you can't live a life. Often feeling cold, especially in the hands and feet. High or rising cholesterol, okay. Various types of heart disease, such as palpitations, which I had, fibrillations, plaque buildup in the arteries, constipation, and that's pretty much everybody would have that. Candidiasis, my whole entire body was riddled with candidiasis, otherwise known as thrush. And I suffered, suffered with that. And I couldn't eat anything except vegetables. That's it. That was it. Nothing with a sugar molecule. Well, almost all prepared food or canned food or, you know, anything like that, processed, has sugar in it. And so I had to live for, I think it was about 5 years like that. Really, it was horrible. Hair loss, dry hair, very dry skin, sometimes so dry it cracks, no eyebrows or thinning outer eyebrows, nodding off easily, needing naps in the afternoon. I used to fall asleep at work, like in presentation, you know, if somebody was doing a presentation, and get into trouble. sleep apnea, which can also be associated with low cortisol, which is what adrenal fatigue is. Feeling like you can't get enough air, inability to concentrate or read long periods of time, forgetfulness and foggy thinking. I mean, it was off the chart for me. Inability to lose weight no matter what you do. Inability to function in a relationship with anyone. So you probably have enough information to understand why that would be, you know, why that's true. You just don't have energy.
Yeah.
No sex drive. Another reason for not having a functional relationship. And for women, difficulties with your periods, either horrendous pain, failure to ovulate, or constant bleeding. I had periods every other month, or being really having PMS. That's a big part of it. Also, inability to get pregnant, lots of miscarriages, swelling, edema, puffiness, lots of puffiness. And for some reason, most people get puffy on their on the that section above your eye, between your eyebrow and your eyelid. That area will get really puffy. Lots of aches, muscle aches and pains. I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia. I don't have any of that anymore. Osteoporosis, acne, exhaustion in every dimension, physical, mental, spiritual, emotional, inability to work full-time, inability to stand on the feet for long periods, complete lack of motivation, extremely crabby, irritable, intolerant of others, broken, peeling fingernails, major anxiety and worry, lactose intolerance, inability to eat in the mornings, joint pain, carpal tunnel symptoms, no appetite, fluid retention to the point of congestive heart failure, and that will kill you. Swollen legs that prevent walking, blood pressure problems, varicose veins, dizziness, low body temperature. And this is something I really want to address, is if you think you may have a thyroid issue, you can do the basal thermometer test and get a basal thermometer, and it must be basal, and you take your temperature every morning. And this will be on the Stop the Thyroid Madness. It's on that website. But anyway, you take your temperature every morning. And if when you wake up it's lower than 98.2, you might well have a thyroid problem. It might also be adrenal fatigue, but the two often accomplish each other because your thyroid's working overtime, gets exhausted, and so the adrenals have to kick in to pick up the slack, and then they get weak. Also, irritable bowel syndrome, colitis, sore feet, painful soles of the feet, that's what I had, nerve damage, and inability to swallow fluid, food, or your own saliva leads to aspiration pneumonia. That's in serious cases. Anyway, and those are just some of the symptoms.
Right, and we don't want to say that if you've got one of these symptoms that this is your problem, but...
Right.
You know, like with anything deserves that if you're concerned, you really need to see an alternative.
Yes. I would recommend a naturopath. Go to a good naturopath. They're far more open to this stuff. If you can't do that, then, what do you call the nurses they're more than nurses? Physician's assistant?
Oh,
no.
Physician's assistant.
Physician assistant, you know, something like that. Nurses, for whatever reason, well, nurses are far more open to new information. Some of the responses I got from doctors were just unbelievable. I had a doctor I'd gone to for several years, and when I moved, I needed to explain to him why I needed natural desiccated thyroid instead of the Synthroid. So I go through the spiel. And the problem with Synthroid is most people with low thyroid need T3 and T4 replacement. And Synthroid only gives you one of those, and I think it's T4. I never can remember. But the natural stuff gives you both of those.
Well,
and,
I think we need to say, now I have no horse in the race, but doctors, as a rule, do not study, well, like they don't study nutrition. There's a lot of other things they don't study, like diagnosing, because they have the pharmaceutical reps coming around telling them.
Right.
I mean, and the reps actually know more about the disease. At least they know more about what they're repping. So that's why we urge you to go elsewhere.
Yes, exactly. What this doctor said to me when I explained him about T3 and T4, he looked me right in the eye and he said, "I don't believe you."
Well, that's his job, to believe the reps. And I do want to say that I'm not talking about my own medical doctors, because they actually are fantastic. But...
Mm-hmm.
They're very much into new things, and they'll try whatever. And if I meant something to them, or if I did back when I was having surgeries and all, they were more than willing to try and experiment. They are not the typical, though.
No, they're very few and far between. They're out there. I have one now who I'm getting my bioidentical hormones from. He also happens to be a total expert in thyroid. I love him to death. He's a human being. He's the only doctor I will go to. And the other thing, I want to say this before we get off the air. Just this morning, I opened up my email, and I get emails from Alliance for Natural Health, and found out that what they're trying to do is, because oftentimes in compound pharmacies, like there was a shortage of the Armor, which is one of the brands for the natural thyroid, a couple of years ago, there was a shortage. You couldn't get it. Nobody could get it. Everybody went nuts. I got online. Everybody was going crazy looking for this stuff. I finally had to order it from Canada, and that's legal. If you can order your thyroid medication from Canada, and you get a prescription from your doctor. And so in lieu of that, you can go to a good compounding pharmacy, which I have one, and they will compound it specially for you so that you have your natural thyroid. Well, there's a bill up that they're trying to make that illegal. They are really trying to put compounding pharmacies out of business.
Muriel, if you will send me that bill, we'll put it on the page, and we'll try to get some, if there's a petition, we'll try to get some.
The bill is S-959. So anybody out there, there's a petition on Alliance for Natural Health, ANH-USA.org. Go there, sign the petition, because
if we lose this,
I don't have a life.
Right now, what we need to urge people to keep a close eye, Fukushima has made a lot of people on the West Coast having the thyroid problems, and
yes.
Children are being born with it. So it's just something to think about.
Yes, and take potassium iodide for that, 12.5 milligrams every day, and that will protect you. That will protect you from getting radiation.
I'm telling somebody else to do that because we're not giving out that kind of advice.
That's what I do. Let me put it that way. But this is all over the internet. You can find that out too.
GreenEggsZine.com, which is good. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Suzanne. Bye.
And we have with us Blaine, Raymond Blaine on Palestine.
Good evening, everyone. How are you?
Hey, we're good. I'm good. How about you?
Great. So tonight I'm going to talk about something that's one of the real reasons why we have the Gaza problem and everybody locked down there. And it's all about money and natural gas. So I've got a story on that. And then I've got a story about a youth movement that is looking to challenge Hamas and what they're up to. And so I'm going to read a little on that. And then I also have another story on here about the spinning of the Israeli-Palestinian peace process and such. So I'll get started with this first story. It's about the natural gas. So for anybody that doesn't know, there's a large natural gas deposit just off the coast of the Gaza Strip, enough, probably about $4 billion worth of gas that would completely transform the whole Gaza Strip into a very economic powerhouse. And so Israel's been done a lot to keep that from happening because they don't want Hamas to become that strong. And so with Hamas in power, they're not going to allow that gas to be taken in by Palestinians. At the same time, Israel has also tried to steal it, or is stealing it, I don't know for sure. But there's international laws that have blocked them from getting into certain parts of these gas fields and trying to steal it from the edges of it and things like that. So anyway, so what it says here is, for the moment, all is quiet on the Israeli-Palestinian peace front. It's too quiet, as they once asked in a movie, Westerns. That depends entirely on what kind of peace is being discussed. Does danger lurk, or does a just peace lie ahead? U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry will be working furiously behind the scenes for a just peace. If so, he would be demanding that the natural gas fields off the Gaza coast would remain under Palestinian control. Gaza Marine Fields is located 30 kilometers off the coast of the Gaza Strip in the eastern Mediterranean Sea. It lies at the water depth of 630 meters. The development of the gas field has been on hold for several years due to disputes between Israel and the Palestinians. Not surprisingly, Israel has already treated the gas field as personal property. On June 16, 2011, oilprice.com wrote, earlier this week, Israel's Ministry of National Infrastructure authorized Noble Energy, a crude oil and gas exploration U.S.-based company based in New York, to begin developing a natural gas field off the Gaza Strip coastline. British Gas has already established two offshore natural gas wells, Gaza Marine 1 and Gaza Marine 2. According to British Gas, the natural reservoir of Gaza is estimated to contain 1.5 trillion cubic meters of natural gas with an estimated net worth of approximately $4 billion. At the time, Palestinian official Dimitri Dilani said that the Israeli Ministry of Infrastructure's decision was in fact a license to steal Gaza's natural gas reserves and demanded international protection for the Palestinian natural gas reserve off Gaza. Now, the other thing that really bothers me personally is the power problems that they have in the Gaza Strip would be completely eliminated if they could get that gas into port and set up infrastructure to move the gas around the strip and to run power plants and sewage treatment plants and things of that nature. So it's pretty sad that that's just sitting there right off the coast, that it can't be accessed because of this ongoing siege and ongoing pissing match between Hamas and the rest of the world, for that matter. So 2 years later, in the quietness of the peace talks, the U.S. is in position to cancel Israel's illegal seizure by affirming that Palestine's natural gas fields belong to Palestine. In addition to enabling Palestinian economic potential through its own natural resources, a just peace would end Israel's illegal occupation of Palestine. The end of the occupation would remove Israel's control of Palestinian borders and give Palestine responsibility for its own internal security. A just peace would deliver an international airport that is a necessity for a new Palestine. A seaport large enough to handle Palestinian tourism and economic traffic will have to be developed. A just peace would provide Palestinians with access to profitable tourism trade and the rich mineral deposits on the shore of the Dead Sea. That shoreline is shared by Israel and Palestine according to the 1967 Green Line border. On the other hand, this is the bad news. The code of silence that currently hovers over the peace talks may also be harboring a darker vision of Palestine's future. Secretary Kerry, acting as something less than an honest broker, could be devising a token economic and freedom bucket list of promises that would be nothing less than a Carthaginian peace imposed by the U.S. and Israel on Palestine, a peace which conquering armies impose on a defeated population. And this term entered history after Rome defeated the Carthage in the Punic Wars from 254 BC to 146 BC. And it's basically that type of peace is an imposition of a brutal peace that crushes an enemy and has such a disastrous conclusion. And this would be the modern version of the Punic Wars. And you can look that up on Wikipedia and read more about that, because it's very similar. And it's kind of strange because it has a lot to do with Tunisia and Libya and some different areas over in that same area. So it all ties together. Then it says the term Carthaginian peace was most recently used to describe the peace terms the U.S. and its allies imposed on Germany in the Treaty of Versailles at the conclusion of World War I. Ironically, it was the unjust and vengeful Carthaginian peace forced upon a defeated Germany that contributed to the rise of Hitler and the Holocaust, in which 6 million Jews died. So it's kind of crazy how, you know, you force this peace on people and then they get organized and then look what happens. It can get ugly on you. And it's just strange that it all kind of ties together. It's very odd. If Kerry and his team are designed a just peace rather than a Carthaginian peace, Israel would have to give up its free pass for its multiple sins and learn to live like the good neighbor it claims it wants to be.
Okay, that's
it. As long as the code of silence continues around the peace talks, we may only speculate. Will the U.S. rid itself of its Zionist propaganda shackles? Will it? and demand a just peace for Israel and Palestine, or is the U.S. busy preparing glossy cover for the Carthinian peace, which would brutalize Palestine and ensure no peace for decades to come? That's kind of what I'm thinking is going to happen. Carthaginian peace would be a disaster for Palestine and Israel. Just peace is the only way to bring peace to the entire region. And I really believe that, too. So, you know, Gaza could be 100% self-sufficient. I've said that many times over the years. I've talked about this particular deal that they have all these natural resources right off the coast. But that as long as Hamas is in power, that gas is never going to reach the shore in Gaza. They continue to move it. Egypt stealing it off of one side and Israel stealing it off the other. And that's the other reason why Egypt is such a pain in the ass to Gaza as well. They want to keep that area shut down because, you know, they talk about the marine blockade, but, you know, Egypt helps block the block to also enforce the blockade as well along the coast there. They don't allow Palestinian fishermen and stuff into those areas, and they run them off, and they do the same thing that Israel does, you know, out in the other areas, only three miles off their coast. So Israel's just as guilty. Now that the Muslim Brotherhood is out of power, things aren't going to be good for Gaza. They are really going to clamp down on them. They are really trying to get rid of Hamas. And I don't know if that's going to happen, but I kind of think it might be best for everybody if they would just step aside.
But Hamas was legally elected.
A long time ago. And, but have blocked every effort a lot. I mean, they're just as guilty as Fatah in reconciliation. They, you know, go in there, and then they change the rules every time. And it's like, wait a second. Now, I'm not saying they're all wrong, but I'm not saying they're right either.
Right.
So this is another story. This is off of Mon News. This is pretty big. And the picture is of some kids with their black mask on their face. Kind of scary, but at the same time, they're not messing around. So it's a newly announced Palestinian youth movement said to be based in the Gaza Strip. Released a statement in a video Sunday calling on all residents of Gaza to protest on November 11th. They urge protest against rivalries, exclusion, single-handedness, unjust oppression, and the violation of the inalienable rights of the people of Gaza. And see, that's been a big problem I've had with Hamas, is that if you're with Hamas, you're good, but if you're not, then you're neglected, and that's not right. That's not good at all. So anyway, so we can't remain silent anymore, and those who count on our defeat are mistaken losers, while those who count on our tolerance should know that tolerance can come to an end. Amak Askus read on behalf of a new movement identifies as Rebel Against Injustice. November 11, 2013 is the desired day, out of the statement, which highlighted that on that day, all tyrannies and oppression practiced by the Muslim Brotherhood in Gaza will come to an end. They have practiced fraud in the name of religion and resistance, declaring themselves as believers while they labeled us as disbelievers. The statement accused Hamas and Gaza of shedding Palestinian blood for the sake of murder only, as well as torturing and humiliating people through their daily practices in Gaza. It is time we rejected death forcibly under Hamas pretext of security. Our people, regardless of their political and even religious affiliations, have been targeted by their criminality. The statement continued. It explicitly accused Hamas of murder, torture, sabotage, bribes, vandalism, and smuggling. Those who carry resistance fighters' rifles must stop pointing these rifles at their own people and stop scaring them, stabbing them, betraying them, and trading their pains. The statement pledged that Hamas would not rule Gaza anymore after November 11th, but it said that Hamas's people would not be asked to leave Gaza. We will not ask you to leave because you are part of us. Even if you're here to exterminate us, all options are open to us except arms because we are different from you. It is you, not us, who would point their guns at their brothers. The statement ended by urging young people in Gaza and young people of Palestine to rebel and added that God will eventually administer justice to those who have been oppressed. So that's pretty crazy stuff. That's big. We'll see what happens November 11th on that. That's big stuff. They could be setting. I mean, you got to understand that there's 1.7 million, 1.8 million people in the Gaza Strip, and what, 800,000 of them are under the age of 18? So can you imagine a youth movement of 3 million people? You know, I mean, and what do these kids have to lose? I mean, really. So think about the desperateness of it. You know, I mean, Morsi came to power. It didn't change anything in Gaza. All it did was allow the Sinai to blow up and then blame it on the people in Gaza. And who knows who's involved? You know, we don't know nobody knows for sure. You know, maybe there really was weapon smuggling coming out of Gaza, but maybe who knows who was involved with it.
Right.
So
like
there's a lot going on over there, you know, and
yeah.
It's all muddled. It's very muddy. Everything's muddy over there, as it's always been, for that matter. But, yeah, so this is pretty crazy that I knew that these guys have the courage to step up and say, all right, we've had enough. There's nothing going on. We sit here and just watch this big circle, you know, and just goes round and round and round, and it doesn't help anybody. So I thought that was a really interesting story. And, you know, I almost have to agree with them. Something has to change. You know, if the world and the international community and not even the Arab governments can handle Hamas or don't want them in, then they need to make a change, because this can't go on. Something has to change drastically, whether it means regime change, but it has to be done by the people. And that's what I liked about that. Now, on the other hand, everybody has to look at it this way. Who's financing them? Who put them up to this? What is it, really a Gaza-based thing? Is it really homegrown? Or are there outside forces? So, you know, I always keep the eye on that kind of thing. And if I find something about that, I'll definitely report on that. Okay, so let's see, how much time do I got left?
I got
15 minutes.
12, yeah, 15, close, yeah.
Something like that.
Something like
you're not
that.
Ready to throw me off yet. Okay, good. Let's see here, I had one more, and it was pretty crazy, and now I can't find it, of course. So that's when you go looking for it, you can't ever find it.
Well, I want to say that we're always grateful for you to take time off from work, like you're using your lunch hour to...
Actually, no, I don't do that anymore.
No.
Changed my schedule. No, my schedule now, I work 3 days a week. I'm working Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I just take 6 o'clock out of my Wednesday every week to do this.
Oh, okay then. All
so
right.
Sometimes I'm all different places when I do this, but it's wonderful. It's been great. So I set it up sometime in the morning and the afternoon, and then I get ready, and then at 6 o'clock I call you guys, and we do this. So, yeah, it's, you know, anything we can do to get the word out and get people looking at it and get people talking about it, and, you know, it's the thing to do, people. It's get involved, you know.
Right.
And don't believe me, Daniel. Go out there and look for yourself and see what you can find out. I mean, this Mon News Agency, it's unfortunate, but every single story just about this week is about some kind of home demolition. They killed another guy in Palestine in Jenin during a raid. They've, you know, they're doing it just to stir it up because they're trying to make sure that there's no peace.
Exactly.
Joseph's tomb got raided by a bunch of settlers and under the military, and they shot a bunch of people and shoot tear gas into the neighborhoods, and there's all kinds of stuff that's going on over there. There was a prisoner release last week as well that was, you know, bittersweet. It was good for, you know, getting these people out of jail, but at the same time, it's too little too late. They let go 46 and they arrested probably another 15 kids, you know, so.
Right, and then the people.
Take it with a grain of salt, you know.
That chances are they're going to rearrest about half of them.
Right.
The way they
do. And, you know, people, they're just dividing us and dividing us. You know, that I want to also, you know, give a heartfelt, you know, prayer to the people of Syria and all the things they have going on over there, and supposed chemical attacks, which I'm sure it wasn't. It was probably chlorine gas, which these insurgents are able to get fairly easy, that caused people to suffocate and die. And a lot of kids got killed, and that's not by accident. They do that for Western consumption. So please don't.
Sure.
I mean, it's horrible that it happened, but, you know, watch out when you start listening to the American media, because they're really one-sided, and they're trying to get us to okay them going into a...
Yeah. Right.
To go and support a group that does not have any American interest involved in, they just want us to come in there and help them smash things and then take over and start an Islamic thing. And we'll have the same thing happen that happened in Egypt. But
yeah.
Also, Mubarak getting let out of jail, that's just crazy. Wow.
That's
I kind of thought it would happen, you know, but I didn't think it would happen like that. So that's pretty big stuff. There's just so much going on over there, but everybody needs to realize that Palestine's under siege right now, and that it's really it's gotten worse, not better, since Egypt collapsed. And it's so dangerous that I would like to go there, but I don't think it's going to happen because it's just so divided. And again, everybody, that's not an accident. They're trying to keep us dividing us by class, because if they divided us by class, the 1% would have their hands full. So instead, they divide us politically and religiously, and they're doing a great job of it. And everybody, you're falling for it. And shake your head and wake yourself up a little bit, throw some cold water in your face, and realize that, wait a second, you know, we need to be one. We can't be divided like this.
Right.
You need to put this stuff aside, because we're all people, but we're all losing. And the 1% is just running off.
Solidarity. It's international symbol, exactly.
One world, one people, in peace.
That's it.
We need to go after the criminal people that are running the show and expose them for the criminals that they are, and try to take care of this. That's the only way we're going to... But there's so many more of us than them, too, so come on, we can do this, people. But everybody needs to get involved, and everybody needs to put their 2 cents worth in and get after it. And if you see bullshit, call bullshit. Use their tactics against them, you know. See something, say something.
Yeah.
Oh my God. See something, say something. Quit letting them just take over and do things. How does Daniel Manning get 35 years for exposing war crimes, and Obama gets, you know, Nobel Peace Prizes for committing them?
Yeah, there's something there that just makes me want to...
Everything that is black is white, and everything is white is black, and everybody seems to be okay with it. And I don't get it. I just keep shaking my head saying, am I the crazy one? Am I, you know, you start to question yourself.
Yeah, well done.
You're freaking nuts. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
You start wondering, though, you know, geez, really? And here's some of these people, and some of the comments that are made after these stories are just incredible. That people really feel this way or really think this way. It's just blows my mind. Just, I don't get it. This country especially. You know,
I saw
so brainwashed.
That should, it was very good. I'm going to misquote it, but a Facebook friend wrote that after the Second World War, that a lot of the Germans who, you know, did despicable acts were charged, even though they said that they were just following orders. So now Bradley Manning, who exposed the war crimes and didn't follow orders, is, you know, nothing happened. Well, something did happen to those Germans, but now it's a twist around, because he was sentenced, like you said, to 35 years. And there is no excuse for that. I mean, he was found guilty on 5 charges.
Yeah, and then look at the bankers who are just running rickshaw wasting billions and collapsing countries and all this stuff. And those poor people that were murdered, you know, that Bradley Manning brought, you know, that all that to people's attention. You know, what is it, just
video
cheap.
The people,
well, yeah, you know, look at what's happening to the drone pilots. They're losing their minds. You know, they're living in Utah and Nevada, and they're killing people, and they have to sit there and watch people bleed out and go cold. And, I can't even imagine. It just gives me chills. And then you have to go home, and you can't talk about it. How was your day, honey?
Right.
Oh, one guy, he said he killed 1,623 people in drone attacks. And he's lost his mind. Gee, I can't imagine. And he's nothing but garbage to the military now. He doesn't. They don't care. He won't get the medical treatment he needs or the psychological treatment he needs.
No,
he's disposable. He's disposable. They hope he kills himself. I mean, look at how many people have killed themselves in the military. And what's with the people? You know, I support people that are in the military only because, man, sometimes I think they weren't that smart when they did that, or maybe they weren't educated enough. I don't know. Yeah, I don't necessarily blame it on them, but what's going on with the families that support this crap? Are you going to support them sending you boys and girls to Syria next? I mean, what? Really? For what? To go and help extremist Muslims attack a country that was completely stable until people got involved and started screwing things up? You know, where's these families of these soldiers? You know, they all go to the funerals, and I feel horrible for them. But at the same time, why aren't you saying something before they send them?
Well, that's it. Years ago, it was like, oh, okay, I figured people didn't know. And, you know, it was a quote-unquote honorable thing to send your young people off to fight for our freedom, right? But now, with everything so public and the Internet, when people decide now to join the service, I can't believe that they're that stupid that they don't know what they're in for. I mean, they know what they're in for,
but there's no jobs. That's not by accident, you know?
Right. Well, no, for sure.
Do you think rich kids are going into the military? Do you really think that the majority of rich kids are going into the military? No.
Not that much. Nope.
No, it's the inner city kids that don't have a chance, that they got really no other choice. Let's do something, you know. And they promise them the world, and then they go send them out to be killed, or be damaged. I mean, I think I'd rather die than come back all scarred and knowing and seeing all the things I saw and did. No way. There are things worse than death.
They can never. Get past. I mean, well, they can't forget what they did.
The post-traumatic stress is a joke to me. It's continuous traumatic stress.
It is, yeah.
You know? So that's kind of off the subject of Palestine, but that's the kind of stuff that's going on in this world, people. But Palestine really needs our help, and they're getting shut down worse and worse and worse. So we really got to, you know, with all these other things going on, we need to double our efforts to keep Palestine on the front page and in our hearts and stuff, and pray that they get to keep their natural gas, because that could really change some people's lives and change the area. I don't have a lot of faith in it, but at the same time, hey, at least somebody's talking about it. That was James M. Wall, and he's a columnist on a site called Veterans News Now, and it's Independent Military World Affairs, and it's actually I kind of like some of the stories. They're pretty cool. So they're pretty critical of the U.S. One of them is U.S., Israel, Saudi Arabia, the real axis of evil. So stories like that. If anybody wants to check that out.
Yeah, so some true. Remember, we're not advocating that you listen or watch MSM, because mainstream media is not going to tell you what's really going on.
No, but, you know, also cross-reference everything. Don't just take anybody's word for it, because everybody has their own agenda. Even if the agenda is very similar to your own, make sure you're cross-referencing stuff, because if you're not, you're doing yourself a disservice and you're only one-sided and you're just as bad as the other people that don't agree with you, because you don't know both sides. And sometimes you'll find, wait a second, maybe that's not all that it's cracked up to be. You know, and everybody talks about the reason they've got Gaza locked down is because they keep firing rockets. Well, that's not true. The reason they've got Gaza locked down is because they have an extremist government that's very repressive to their people and not a nice group of people, and have natural gas off their coast that these freaking everybody wants to steal, not just Israel. Egypt has a big hand in this. So, you know, it's very complicated stuff, but it's the real reason why Gaza is under siege.
Yeah.
That's the real reason. So
I did
get rid of Hamas, and maybe that'll change some things, but who knows even then.
I did read that this week again, that there's, what is it, $300 million that Israel is planning on giving students to just to do good propaganda for Israel, because it's getting a bad rep.
They've been doing that for a long, long time.
I know, but this is new money. This is something new.
Yeah. Yeah, well, new money that came from the lovely gift
US?
Of the United States. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's
they get like $2,000 a year to spread positive propaganda about Israel.
That's what they were doing. That was
that's what Stand With Us does. That's who finances Stand With Us. That's how they get around it too.
But this is
a non-governmental organization, which is a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah.
They send all our half our politicians off to Israel on these little, vacations.
Right. It's like, go see for yourself the wonderful.
Yeah, but don't look over the wall.
Don't look over the wall.
No, nothing to see over here. I'm going to fly you by helicopter with tinted windows.
Roger Waters, again, this week, wrote a letter. He's from Pink Floyd. He wrote a letter asking his fellow musicians and artists to boycott Israel. He's been an advocate for Palestine for years, and this was so good for him.
It says right here, the letter, it says, given the ability or unwillingness of our governments to act, it falls to civil society and conscientious citizens of the world to dust off our consciousness, shoulder our responsibilities, and act. I write to you now, my brothers and sisters in the family of rock and roll, to ask you to join with me and thousands of other artists around the world to declare a cultural boycott on Israel, proclaiming our rejection of apartheid in Israel and occupied Palestine by pledging not to perform or exhibit in Israel or accept any award or funding from any institution linked to the government of Israel. We love you. Roger Waters is awesome.
Yeah.
He's the best. So freaking talented and so cool.
And he has been really for years a pro-Palestinian advocate. So this is just
he's an anti-Semite because he has a pig with an Israeli flag on it. Not a lot of other things, but the Israeli flag went really well with all the rest of it.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. So I guess
anytime we can get somebody with some fame and whatever, it really helps, because people tend to listen more to them than to us.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Wow, this is so this is another part of it. It says, this letter has been simmering in the back burner of my consciousness for some time. It is 7 years since I joined the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction movement, a nonviolent movement that opposes Israel's occupation of the West Bank and violations of international law and Palestinian human rights. The aim of BDS is to bring international attention to these Israeli policies and hopefully to bring them to an end. All the people of the region deserve better than this. To cut to the chase, Israel has been found guilty independently by international human rights organizations, UN officials, and the International Court of Justice of serious breaches of international law. These include, and I will name only two, the crime of apartheid, the systematic oppression of one ethnic group by another. On 9th of March 2012, for instance, the UN Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination called on Israel to end its racist policies and laws that contravene the prohibition against racial segregation and apartheid. The crimes against ethnic cleansing, the forcibly removal of indigenous people from their rightful to land in order to settle occupying population. For example, in East Jerusalem, non-Jewish families are routinely physically evicted from their homes to make way for Jewish occupants.
Yeah.
And then there are others. Given the inability or unwillingness of our governments, the United Nations Security Council, to put pressure on Israel to cease these violations and make reparations to the victims, it falls on civil society, consciousness, citizens of the world, to dust off consciousness, and that's when he goes over that. And then he says, I'm writing to you now because of two recent events. Stevie Wonder, word came to me the first week of last December that Stevie Wonder had been booked to headline a gala dinner for the Friends of Israelis Defense Force in L.A. on 6th of December 2012, an event to raise money for the Israeli Armed Forces. As if the $4,300,000 that would the U.S. taxpayers give them each year was not enough. This came right after the Israeli Defense Force had concluded yet another war in Gaza, Operation Pillar of Defense. According to the Human Rights Watch, committing war crimes against the besieged 1.6 million Palestinians there. Anyway, I wrote to Stevie to try to persuade him to cancel. My letter ran along these lines. Would you have felt okay performing at the Policeman's Ball in Johannesburg the night after the Sharpeville Massacre in 1960 or in Birmingham, Alabama, to raise money for the law enforcement officers who clubbed, tear gassed, and water cannoned those children trying to integrate in 1963? Archbishop Desmond Tutu also wrote an impassioned plea to Stevie, and 3,000 others appended their names to a change.org petition. See Stevie to his great credit counts. Earlier this week,
that.
I delivered a speech. Yep, I do too. It was great. That week, he delivered a speech to the United Nations. If you're interested, you can find the speech on YouTube. So you might want to look that up. He did a speech to the UN. I haven't heard it or read it, but I want to check it out. Okay. The interesting thing about these two stories is there was not one mention of either story in the mainstream media or in the United States. The clear inference would be that the media in the USA is not interested in the predicament of the Palestinian people, or for that matter, the predicament of the Israeli people. We can only hope that they may become interested in, as they eventually did in the politics of apartheid South Africa. Back in the days of apartheid South Africa, at least, at first, it was a trickle of artists that refused to play there. A trickle that exercised a culture boycott. Then it became a stream, then a river, then a torrent, then a flood. Remember Steve Van Zandt, Bruce, and all the others? We will not play in Sun City. Why? Because like the UN and International Courts of Justice, they understood that apartheid is wrong. The sports community joined the battle. No one would go and play cricket or rugby in South Africa. And eventually the political community joined in as well. We all, as global musicians, sportings, and political communities, raised our voices as one of the apartheid regime in South Africa fell. Maybe we are at the tipping point now with Israel and Palestine. These are good people, both, and they deserve a just solution to their predicament. Each and every one of them deserves freedom, justice, and equal rights. Just recently, the ANC, the ruling party of South Africa, has endorsed BDS. We are now nearly there. Please join me and all our brothers and sisters in global civil society in proclaiming our rejection of apartheid in Israel and occupied Palestine by pledging not to perform or exhibit in Israel or accept any award or funding from institutions linked to the government of Israel until Israel complies with international law and universal principles of human rights. So that's pretty damn cool.
I think so.
Sorry, I'm way over my time.
So Reed did not show. I'm not sure what's going on down there. So we're fine.
All right. Well, I failed. Well, good. Well, I was glad that I was able to read that because he's awesome. And everybody, go and look up his stuff and support his stuff and get involved with that. Also, a lot of stuff going on with Thirsting for Justice. That Battier stuff is going on where they're trying to build a wall through all those ancient canals. So if you guys are involved with any churches or anything, get involved with your pastors and stuff and look it up and show them what's going on and try to help those nuns and priests at that monastery to keep their property and keep their land and get the international community involved to try to save this stuff because centuries old and sucks. They just want to run over history. They want to just erase it. And they're doing a pretty good job of it. And be nice to stop it for one.
I don't have words.
If
that's it for now, we'll see you next week.
Yes, we'll see you next week, and everybody have a great day. And
thanks so much.
You're welcome. And I just want to give a shout out to everybody in Palestine that might be listening. I'm thinking about you guys, and I know it's not getting easier; it's getting more difficult. And please, everybody, if there's anything you can do to help them, just try. And all you people in Egypt, I really hope that things come together and everybody needs to come together as one. We need to quit fighting, and we need to go after the people that are causing these problems, not the actual people that they pitted against each other. So
that's right.
And so everybody be safe. And this is Raymond Blaine on Palestine. Have a great week.
Thank you. Thank you. And before we sign off, I just wanted to say that from an earlier segment tonight, Merle Stevens' music can be heard on YouTube. So also, I will post the YouTube vids on Aaron Martefield Radio on Facebook, so you'll be able to see them there. So, everybody, have a great rest of the week, and we will be back next Wednesday. Good night.